Hello, ODAC fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the ODAC podcast. My name is JJ Nikoloff. I'm the associate commissioner with the Old Dominion Athletic Conference. And as always, I'm joined by the commissioner, Brad Bankston. Brad, how you doing today?
JJ, doing great. Excited for the end of one portion of the fall season last weekend, getting started with NCAAs and those sports, and wrapping up both volleyball and football this weekend. So a lot going on with basketball and wrestling and swimming. So the first crossover season, not quite as bad as the spring, but probably right there with you. I'm sure you got a lot going on with awards. So plenty of things to juggle this time of the year.
With that spring one, we're sitting at the ODAC basketball championship where we're still looking forward to the swimming national championships, indoor track and field stuff. Golf has started. Baseball's out. Oh, it's just all going on at the same time. So it's that time of year. The ramp up happened for us here in the fall, obviously, over the past week plus with the championships for the ODAC. We crowned champions in field hockey and men's and women's soccer. We got volleyball coming up here, championship this weekend, as well as a football trophy that's going to be handed out. And we're going to focus a lot about football here on this edition of the show, folks. We've got the 130th edition of the game at Randolph-Macon between Hampton-Sydney, the oldest and, in my view, greatest small college football rivalry in the South, and really in all.
They tell you that for sure. I'm sure
in all of Division III. Absolutely, 20 years here, I'm indoctrinated now, so it's good to go. But we've also got a couple other big games that are coming about because we've got a Chesapeake Challenge, two bowl games to determine with the Landmark Conference, and really, I think the Landmark Conference, at least one of their teams, is fully ready to go, if not both of them. But folks, depending on the results this weekend, we have three teams that can either be hosting or traveling or out. So exactly. We'll see what it looks like. But it's been a week for football here that we've had coming across, both preparation for these games and coming off of last weekend, Brad.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's appropriate, obviously, to bring the attention that we've had on that Averett, the conclusion of the Averett-Guilford game and the decision that was made by the institutions and the conference for them to discontinue the end of their season. You know, I think unfortunately for two other teams, both Roanoke and Bridgewater, that ended the regular season for them and created a situation where they weren't able to contest the last contest against their scheduled opponent. You know, JJ, you never want to be in a situation like that, certainly, and certainly want to commend both Guilford and Averett for the process and the communication and collaboration that they had in trying to come to what they believe to be the correct conclusion following what happened last weekend. And we look forward to, obviously, next season for those teams coming back and look forward to wrapping up this season with, you know, two pretty darn good football games this weekend. And Washington and Lee and Shenandoah, which, as you said, there's a lot of marbles on the table from a standpoint of what does that mean for their opportunity to play another game in the bowl series for Chesapeake's Challenge. And then, of course, the game that we're talking about today and our featured interviews in Randolph-Macon and Hampton-Sydney's 130th meeting. So great stuff. And you throw in the volleyball championship this weekend with semifinals while we're recording this tonight. You know, lots going on and an exciting time. So looking forward to this weekend's action.
Yep, as we always do, ODAC fans, letting you know when we record this. This is Thursday, November 13th, as I'm looking at the date here and I can't read. 7 days from my 45th birthday, so thank you for the early birthday wishes on that one there, folks. But we've got the volleyball semifinals tonight, and then football games here in the championship for volleyball this weekend. As Brad mentioned, other sports going on. But the game is the big one that is coming on, at least the football side of it, Flo College. It'll be free for viewers to watch this weekend as well. So there's a YouTube link that should be a part of all the schedules out there that'll be showing up on the Flo College YouTube platform on their Flo College football site. So really should be an outstanding opportunity to see that game on that national platform as well. But we had an opportunity to talk to two individuals with a lot of history with Randolph-Macon and Hampton-Sydney, and learning some things, or at least me learning something, that Coach Jim Blackburn, who coached at Randolph-Macon, also came over and was the Dean of Students in Hampton-Sydney. I don't know how that's even allowable. Isn't it in every Randolph-Macon contract that you can't leave and go coach?
I don't know. I don't know. Because we somehow worked out.
we know it can work the other way because we've got Josh Lux, who was at Hampton Sydney as the men's soccer coach and came over to Macon to.
And had previously been at Macon as a student athlete.
Well, so there you go.
So he went Hampton Sydney, Randolph Macon. So how about
maybe
that?
That's even worse going back and forth after being a student athlete throughout all that.
Who knows?
But we got to talk to Coach Blackburn and talk to Coach Joe Bush, who, among other things, being the head coach for football, for tennis. He was also the athletic director, and that's how I know him because, you know, when I first started here with the ODAC, he was the AD, and Joe Bush is a really good man, and it was a good conversation with both of these gentlemen. We started off with Coach Blackburn, so that's where we're going to start you off here, and go ahead and listen to the interview that we had with Jim Blackburn earlier today. We're joined by former Randolph-Macon football head coach Jim Blackburn. Coach, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Doing great. It's game week, right?
I know. The 130th edition of the game, the greatest rivalry in small college football in the South. We're looking forward to it. Coach, I think you actually coached in a few of these ball games. Talk to us a little bit about your impressions, your experiences playing in this specific contest against rivals Hampton Sydney.
Well, you know, when I came to Randolph-Macon, I heard about the rivalry, and you know, I had come from some rivalries that I had coached at, you know, at the University of Florida, and you had Florida Georgia, and you know, played at Virginia, and had the Virginia Tech, and all that kind of stuff. But you know, this game is really special, and I knew that. But I think sometimes Randolph-Macon alumni really didn't, they sort of took umbrage with my attitude towards it because I never really hated Hampton Sydney. It was a big rival game. I always viewed it as almost like playing my twin brother in pickup basketball when we were young. It was no holds barred. You tried your very best to beat your brother, and you did anything you could do. And sometimes it ended up in fisticuffs, but after the game, you know, you put your arm around him and you know, you went on home. You know, I never really hated Hampton Sydney, but it certainly I understood it was a huge rivalry, and I know everyone gives their all in this particular game. That's players, coaches, fans, even those folks who don't know anything about football. They get excited about this game.
Coach, you talked about your time. You were at Virginia. You transitioned. You were coaching other places. You get to Randolph-Macon in, I think, 1973, and you're the defensive coordinator. And you do that with another head coach there who's an ODAC Hall of Famer. Of course, this is the 50th anniversary of the ODAC, and we're so just honored to be able to have 50 Hall of Famers that are being inducted into the inaugural class of the ODAC Hall of Fame. And that guy's Ted Keller. Do you mind talking a little bit about, one, your experiences with Ted and Ted as a coach, and, you know, any other embarrassing stories you could probably tell on him, but maybe his view of the game and what, you know, and things you learned from Ted in that process before you took over as head coach?
Yeah, you know, Ted hired me. I was the only full-time assistant coach, and I had responsibility for the defense, and Ted was a great delegator, and I learned a lot from him about leadership and being able to empower those people who work with you and for you, and he did that. He turned it over to me and said, I'm head coach and I'm offensive coordinator. I've got enough stuff to do. The defense is yours, Jim. If you have questions or concerns, I'm always here. But the defense is yours, which was, you know, for a young coach, you know, I was, you know, just blown away by that he wouldn't be looking over my shoulder. And I learned a lot by just doing and making mistakes on my own. And so he really taught me a lot about leadership, about preparing and being super prepared and organized. Because that was really his main forte, was his organizational ability. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was a pleasure working with him. He's a great guy. And he was my mentor. And I think I learned a lot of things that I applied when I became head coach that helped me have what success I did have. And I'm just thankful for Ted Keller. Great guy.
Wonderful words. Coach, what was his outlook of the game? Did he hold the same kind of balance that you did about, you know, the love of competition, or was there a little bit, was there a little more fire with Ted when you got to this one?
I think, you know, Ted was always under control. He never let his emotions get the best of him, either during the ball game or during practice. He rarely lost his temper, rarely got overly emotional or excited. And he really believed that a well-prepared team and a team that knows its assignments and knows what it's supposed to do is going to be more highly motivated than one that just works up the emotion and tries to play on passion. I think in that regard, he was kind of the opposite of Stokely. Stokely was his teams were so fundamentally sound, but also he worked a lot on getting his guys passionate and excited about playing the game. But I think both of them, you know, they were part of that rivalry for years, and it was just part of their makeup. And they lived and breathed that Ham City Randolph-Macon game.
Yeah, Coach, some of the things that come with rivalries are the antics, the pranks, the funny stories. I mean, you walk around right now, you'll see at that game, instead of Hampton City wearing T-shirts to say Beat Macon, it'll say Meat Bacon on it, you know, with the guys out there. Talk about some of the funny things that you saw during your time associated with this game and maybe some of the traditions that have permeated over time.
Well, I think, you know, one thing that stands out, I was never involved in, but I found out about, was the painting of the eagle down at Hamden, Sydney. A lot of times the fraternity brothers at Randolph-Macon would drive down under cover of darkness to Hamden, Sydney, and try to paint their eagle that's down in that end zone a nice lemon and black. And the Hamden Sydney boys would be there protecting the eagle. So we had some guys end up in jail, and you know, sometimes the eagle got painted and sometimes it didn't, but that was one thing. Another thing was the, what was really unusual in this game was the following of the fans at the away game. We would have a busload after busload of fans that would travel down to Hamden, Sydney, and for gosh, it was about probably 8 or 9 years straight that the traveling team actually won. So there was no home field advantage. Wow. We went down there and won. They came to Ashland and won for 8 years straight, which is really different. There were a lot of antics going on. I wasn't really involved with the antic part of it, but you know, I was too concentrated on trying to win a ball game against good football teams.
Yeah, well, I love that story of the painting of the eagle, though. It's basically sounds like an 80-mile game of capture the flag. I mean, got to protect the rock, yeah, well, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think one thing that stands out as far as the games themselves, it seemed like there was always seemed to be big plays that tended to shift the momentum. There were just huge shifts in momentum in the games, whether it was in the kicking game, you know, a blocked kick or a dropped punt or maybe a long runner pass or a interception or a fumble. That just sort of shifted the game completely. And that just marked many of the games that I was involved in. One that was not so close, though, I remember it may have been the very first year that I was coaching in the 73. Hamden Sydney had a really great team, had Jimmy Ferguson, the wonderful running back, and Ed Kelly was probably one of the best defensive ends I've ever seen. And they kicked the you-know-what out of us, beat us 35-0, I think. And I was just shaking my head and said, man, this rivalry is for real. These guys are good. And, you know, it sort of put an exclamation point on my need to prepare extra hard for that game.
Coach, one of the antics I had heard secondhand, obviously been doing this for quite some time here in the ODAC, was that on one occasion when Randolph-Macon was playing on grass, that the Hampton-Sydney students somehow had gotten to the grass field and put HSC in the grass with fertilizer. And it took quite a while, but as they started to notice closer to the game time, there was a green HSC in the stadium grass that, you know, normally in that November timeframe, you've got the grass kind of fading out. And to their credit, they had somehow figured out a way creatively to brand the Randolph-Macon gridiron. So that's one of them that I always chuckle out of.
I don't recall that. That may have been, you know, out of my time of coaching there, but that certainly sounds like something that the students would do.
Love it.
Coach, when you get, I guess when you start thinking about it as we wrap things up, you know, you made a really interesting transition. You were the head coach, you were assistant coach, you were the head coach at Randolph-Macon. Then somehow, you know, unbeknownst to how anybody could imagine that's passionate about this game, you ended up at Hampton-Sydney in an administrative role. What did that mean to you?
I did.
How did all that work out as we wrap up this great memory trip down memory lane?
Well, while I was working as a coach at Randolph-Macon, I was working towards my doctorate. That was a dream that I'd had. And I just chipped away at it for about 11 years at the University of Virginia, and took classes in the off season and summer and that sort of thing. And so eventually I got my doctorate and moved into student personnel work. I became assistant dean of students for Ira Andrews and did that for about 7 years. During that time, actually, my oldest son, Jamie, went to school at Hampton-Sydney. He got a great scholarship there, and he had a great experience, wonderful education there. And, you know, people at Randolph-Macon kind of looked at me and said, how can you let your son go to Hampton-Sydney? But that was a great experience. I knew a lot of the people at Hampton-Sydney, was good friends with them. And, about after the 7 years as assistant dean of students at Randolph-Macon, Lou Drew, the dean of students at Hampton-Sydney, retired, and I was hired as the dean of students at Hampton-Sydney. Went down there and became a part of that culture. So it's an interesting mix with both my son Jamie and me going to Hampton-Sydney, but you know it. At this point, I'm with Pedro and the Yellow Jackets as far as the game now. 100%. Nobody should question my loyalty on that.
Well, Coach, I think we're going to have a great show coming up here on Saturday. Randolph-Macon hosting this year's edition of the game 130. Hampton-Sydney coming to town. You know, Coach, you going to be there? Are you going to be in attendance?
I cannot make it, unfortunately. I'm planning on if we host a game in the playoffs, I'm going to be there, but I can't make it this weekend. I'll be watching the broadcast and listening to Marty Wilson and Rod Witham, and looking forward to that. It should be a great matchup.
Well, they'll do a great job. The game this weekend is free on Flo College's YouTube station, so we'll be able to show that to everybody out there too. And Coach, just so you know, that just in case we find any Hampton-Sydney people walking around with spray paint cans, we'll be sure to kick them out, so we don't have any of that going on. But we want to thank you for joining us here today and helping us tell this story.
Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
Sure.
I became very impressed with Stokely Fulton. I know you're going to talk with Joe Bush about Stokely in the game. Stokely Fulton was a man of great integrity and passion, and one of the most respected people that I know. And it was an honor to know him and to coach against him and be in this profession with him.
Well, we haven't talked with Coach Bush yet, but you can be guaranteed now we're going to make him say some good things about you and Ted Keller now. So that's good. Coach, thanks for joining us today. Looking forward to watching the game this weekend.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Brad, lots of things learning there from Coach Blackburn about some of the antics, some of the great things coming across, and we even got him to say some good things about some Hampton Sydney people. I mean, to have him say multiple good things about, you know, Coach Bush and Coach Stokely Fulton, it's like, wow, how about that?
I certainly wouldn't expect any less. I think he is a well-respected individual, obviously, with the ties to both institutions, his son having attended Hampton Sydney. I mean, those roots go deep, and it was so refreshing to hear his perspective on Ted Keller and the influence that Ted Keller had on his career, as an ODAC Hall of Famer. One of the opportunities that we'll have throughout the year is the chance for us to kind of reminisce with some of those honorees that aren't with us anymore. And we featured both of those today. We heard a lot about Ted, of course, through Coach Blackburn. We're also going to hear a lot about Stokely Fulton and his legacy at Hampton Sydney through Coach Joe Bush. So let's take the opportunity to listen in to the time that we spent with Coach Bush earlier today. We're super happy to have our second guest in today's reflection on the game, former Hampton Sydney head football coach Joe Bush. And gosh, Joe, I think I can lead with, not only were you the former football coach, you were the former tennis coach, golf coach, and athletic director for quite some time for the Tigers. Want to welcome you today and certainly get your reflections on the game itself and kind of your anticipation and how you used to approach this this end of the year contest every year when you were in the when you were in the coach's seat. We'll start with that.
Okay. Thanks for having me. It's quite an honor to be remembered. It was always a special week. There was no doubt about it. Everybody was, more intense and, in your preparation, you just felt like, you were more focused and I don't know how you explain it, but it's just, one of those things. I know I coached with Coach Stallman for 15 years at VMI, and he always had this saying that, he's coached Georgia Tech games, Duke, North Carolina, VMI, VPI, but he said there's nothing comes close to even the Randolph-Macon Hampton Sydney game. He said that was just the biggest rivalry he could think of.
Coach, how much harder was it for you when you were the athletic director and not on the sidelines? What was the difference then? Was it an element of relief? Did you feel the same way? What were your thoughts on that one?
Well, it's a whole different ball game, when you're an administrator and, we had to plan for things like when it was a home game, plan, like 10 to 15 buses from Randolph-Macon or where to park them, where to put them, put their fans and things like that. And it was just, I don't remember a whole lot of problems, the 1 year, the 100th year game in 1994, that was when they tore the goalpost down and we won here at home the 100th game. And that was a big deal. And they took the goalpost and went down the road and put it in the lake and all this other stuff. But, it was entirely different, really. You had to make sure everything went okay for Randolph-Macon, and it just worked out well for both teams.
Coach, one of the things we get to do this year is this is the 50th year of the ODAC. So in addition to looking at games like this, the 130th edition of the game, we also get to look kind of back at the history of the league, telling the story of the league. Hampton-Sydney has four of the first 50 Hall of Fame inductees here as we did the first class of the ODAC Hall of Fame this year. You know, William Moss, Russell Turner, Tony Shaver, and then Stokely Fulton. And, you know, Stokely Fulton, we want to talk a little bit about with you and, you know, just your association with him, some of the things that made him as good as he was, and, you know, what you remember from working with him, or maybe not working with him, but seeing him coach in his editions of the game that he got to be around.
Well, of course, you know, he was a special person, just like Coach Keller, and they were both legends. They were both really good players as collegiate athletes. And I know they treated this game as something special. They said, and I, of course, I wasn't around, but they said that on the Macon week that you didn't even go by and knock on Coach Fulton's door. he was so concentrating on the game, and I don't know. I think it was hard to talk to him with what a lot of people said the week of the Macon game. But they were both great men, role models for the players. You know, high integrity, and you know their record speaks for themselves. I mean, they both are in the Virginia State Hall of Fame, and they're just special people. And they sort of came along about the same time. I think Coach Fulton was a little bit ahead of Coach Keller as far as when he came to the Hampton-Sydney, or when Coach Keller came to Randolph-Macon.
Coach, talk a little bit about Stokely's legend at Hampton-Sydney. Of course, you follow that, right? Kind of your thoughts of his your impressions of him, that the stories you've heard, and I know that his son was still around and active at Hampton-Sydney all those years. You've leaned into it a little bit. Kind of what kind of aura did he carry, for the time that he was there?
Well, you know, first of all, it was tough following him. The expectations were high, and he passed away. I think it was 85, I believe.
That's right.
And they had an interim coach for a year, and then Weenie Miller became the AD here. And Coach Shaver for basketball and myself, we both came at the same time. But, it was, big shoes to fill, and everybody, the alumni and everybody expected, great things. So, it wasn't easy.
Coach, I want to go back to one of the things you said before about, Coach Fulton, and that, you couldn't even walk in the door, knock on the door, that sort of thing. How were you on the game weeks? Were you accessible, or were you one of those two that you're like, don't mess with me?
No, I think I was a little more accessible, but, it was a pressure time. And one of the big things is that time of year, got dark. And of course, we had to bring in these portable lights.
Oh yeah,
and that made a big difference. And we would try to, start as early as we can, and get our work done before it got too dark. And I think it gets dark now around 5 or 6, and that made a big difference. But anyway, we had meetings during the week, and we did all we could, and there were a lot of extracurricular activities going on. Bonfire, and they had the blood drive, still going on. That's a big deal. It's like a competition between Randolph-Macon and Hampton-Sydney. And, it was a special week. We had a senior dinner. We presented the seniors with their silver cups on Friday night. And it was a special week.
Coach, it's one of the things that we had to ask Coach Blackburn, so I got to come back to you here, as we wanted, some of the funny stories here, some of that. But before we get to that, kind of want to talk about Coach Blackburn. Did you ever coach against Coach Jim Blackburn, and what were those games like?
Well, I think we did overlap a few times. I think he became the head coach maybe 4 or 5 years before I did. And, But yeah, we overlapped, and you know, of course, his teams were always well prepared, and they, you know, they were tough, and you know, we had some really interesting games with Randolph-Macon during his tenure, and you know, some special games, and it was, but there were a couple of incidents that. You know, maybe didn't have a whole lot to do with the game, but we were playing them 1 year over in Ashland, and our tailback was headed for the end zone, and he tripped on the infield. You remember how they had their football?
Yes, yeah.
Face field, and the poor kid, he was wide open, getting ready to score, and he tripped on the infield. And in 1 year, you know, they had the locker room was down there at the old gym, and prior to the game, the coaches were outside there and standing next to a Dempsey dumpster or whatever, and I got stung the Yellow Jacket of all things. Here we're playing the Yellow Jackets, and I get stung on my arm, and put ice on it and all this other stuff, and after the game, I had to go to my friend's house and get some treatment, but I thought that was a bad omen. You know, I think we end up getting stung before the game by a Yellow Jacket. You know,
either that or that's just the classic Randolph-Macon campus greeting. I don't. That could be what that is.
Maybe they set it up. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think I think we got our quota there on good things said about Randolph-Macon people that we told Coach Blackburn we'd make you do, talking about him and talking about Ted Keller. But some of the other things that we talked about with him. And I want to talk about with you are some of the antics, some of the pranks, some of the stories that maybe are student athlete or fan related, whatnot. And he mentioned about how there was an eagle that was on Hampton Sydney's campus that the Randolph-Macon guys would come on down and paint under the cover of night, and the Hampton Sydney guys would try to defend it. And I was like, well, that sounds like an 80-mile game of capture the flag. You got to defend the rock. Talk about some things like that, some things that you saw during your time, either both, you know, as a coach, an administrator, just surrounding this game.
Well, that was, I had that down to talk about. Hampton Sydney set up what was called the Macon Guard, and they'd have like round the clock surveillance on the Eagle. And yeah, there were times that, they tried to come over, and maybe they succeeded some as far as painting the eagle, yellow and black. And that was one of the big things. And then, of course, this bus deal, I give them credit because that was a smart move by putting everybody on buses. Like, I mean, there were 10 or 15 buses that would come over here every year. And I had a rumor that maybe there was some drinking going on those buses. But anyway, we had to figure out where to put them. And we put them 1 year, we locked them up in the tennis courts. And that was always a treat when we came over here. And our guys coming over to Randolph-Macon, they drove their cars, you know, and it was much safer for them to bring those buses over here. That was for sure.
Coach, when you have to think back to your time coaching, what game against them stands out? Is one more special than the other? I'm guessing the wins are better than the losses. Is there any one of them that really stands out to you?
Well, my first year here, we ended up going 8-2, and we beat Randolph-Macon in the last game. And, we really had a good team. And, you know, I thought, man, this is going to be a piece of cake, you know. But reality set in the next year, and we got beat over at Macon the next year. But it was always a battle. I mean, we every year it was, something. It came down to the last minute or two or whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, Coach, it's stories like that that kind of, you know, make the matchup here we've got. So game number 130 in the best and oldest small college football rivalry in the South coming up this weekend. Hampton Sydney going to Randolph-Macon. you know, we'll make sure that Brad and I'll both be there. We'll make sure that there's no crazy antics to get anybody in trouble here. But we want to thank you for joining us and help us tell this story, not only of the game, but of some of our Hall of Famers here in this first class, the Yodak Hall of Fame.
I did want to mention before I get off is that I think Pedro and has done a super job, and I think Jeff Burns is he's one of the best ADs in the country, and with what he's done with their all their programs.
No doubt about it. We'll make sure that they hear that so they know it, that a Hampton Sydney guy said good things about some Macon folks.
Okay.
Coach, thanks for joining us today.
All right. Talk to you later.
Brad, I learned a lot from both of these conversations here. You know, obviously I've been in 20 years, so I get to hear a lot and I've got to hear some of the stories, but we forget that there's 30 years of the league that were before me, or I forget, I should say, there's 30 years of the league before me. So I love hearing some of these stories, and it's coming out in some of these Hall of Fame interviews and features we've been able to do. I think one of the things to look at that we didn't mention is we didn't pit the guys against each other, and Coach Blackburn and Coach Bush,
that's right.
Coach Blackburn in his games, he was what, 5-5 as a head coach in the game, and Coach Bush in 11 seasons was 5-6. Overall, for the programs, Hampton Sydney's got a small edge, 60-58-11.
Wow.
The previous 129 versions of that, hopefully the math is right. If not, I'm going to have to call Greg Prouty in Hampton Sydney and ask him where he's keeping his records. But I think it's also on Randolph Macon's website too. But just good to talk to them. Good to hear some stories. Good to hear from Coach Bush again too. It's been a while since I've had an opportunity to talk with him. We mentioned the Hall of Famers that are coming across here. Obviously, the two that were really in depth on that were Stokely Fulton from Hampton Sydney and Ted Keller from Randolph Macon. They each had three other Hall of Famers in this first class coming about. We might have an opportunity to talk to some of them a little bit later, but on Hampton Sydney side, two associated with basketball, former head coach Tony Shaver, and then great student athlete in Russell Turner, and then William Moss, who was, I think, at least a three-time, if not a four-time ODAC Player of the Year in men's tennis.
He was a very, very good tennis
really,
player.
Really, really good, yes. And he was
there. Won the championship. I think Hampton Sydney's men's team won the championship one of the years that William was playing as the number one singles player.
That's what I was going to say. I think broke a longstanding Randolph-Macon or a Washington League streak there, so that was good to hear.
That's exactly right.
Yep, and then on the Macon side, in addition to Ted Keller, you have Hugh Stevens, who's an athletic director and coach more on the baseball side, I think, and a coach a long time ago, but got into the ODAC time frame. I think 1949 to 82 was his tenure there. Obviously, Hampton Sydney didn't have any women to put across, but Randolph Macon certainly does as a coeducational institution. So both on the women's basketball side with record-breaking head coach Carol LaHaye, and then Megan Silva-Schultz, who owns the ODAC scoring record for all basketball. Now we'll see how long that holds up, because we got a player at Washington and Lee right now named Mary Sleissner that looks like she's going to challenge every bit of the record book that we've got with the season she's put across. But we will undoubtedly get an opportunity to talk to Carol and Megan about their exploits at Randolph-Macon.
You know, JJ, you mentioned one thing about the people that were actually going into the Hall of Fame. A really unique piece, and this is pre-U, right? I mean, Randolph-Macon used to be all men. So they went co-ed in the 80s. In a similar time frame, if I'm not mistaken, to Washington and Lee making a similar decision. So interesting that, you know, they had two, they have two and two on their honorees, and Hampton Sydney had the chance to name four men. Obviously, a lot of contributions and a lot of excitement, at least on my end, to look to know who's in the next class, because this first class of Hall of Famers is, you know, over the moon kind of impact. If they're administrators, if they're coaches, if they're coaches and administrators, if they're a player and then coach, and then, or they're just player, it's going to be really cool to kind of watch this and look at the influence that each sport has. One of the things we've done this year is during the championship and the semifinals and quarterfinals, basically having announcements that are recognizing the individuals in that class of 50 that are contributors in that sport.
Yes.
And it's been really neat to kind of hear those names. And as we've talked about a little bit on previous podcasts, how some of those things tie together. The web that's weaved of, you know, somebody was, I had no idea that they had anything to do with that sport. And we talked about Coach Bush a little bit. You know, here's a guy who was the football coach, the athletic director, the golf coach, and the tennis coach at one time. I don't know if he ever had a Coach of the Year honoree in any of those. We'd have to go back and look, but it would be a cool thing to kind of go back and do some investigation.
Well, and we talk about the hats that people wear at Division III all the time too. I know I'm looking at photos that I've gotten from both Randolph Macon and Hampton Sydney here coming across, and one of them's got Coach Bush in a hat that basically has a square shell to it. So I hope that hat never comes out again. That, you know, see if that's one that we.
Hey, knowing Joe, he may still have that hat. I would give him credit. He might have that hat.
Yeah. But I think, you know, with the Hall of Fame stuff, you know, I saw something on Facebook the other day, and I meant to mention it to you. So this is the first time you're hearing it, is that, you know, one of Virginia Wesleyan's is Mike McFarland, who played men's soccer for the Marlins. And he made a post kind of recalling back to, I think he learned about his Hall of Fame induction on August 13th. And he made a post about it, and it let me know, seeing this, you know, straight from the horse's mouth of one of the 50, that, you know, the appreciation that they've got for that. And I know we talked with Enza Steele, and we talked with Missy Ackerman that said the same thing. And those were kind of in interviews that, you know, we knew we were going to talk about this stuff. But that's just something that came across my feed that I saw, that I was like, you know, really, this is outstanding, because he was talking about how appreciative he was of getting into the Virginia Wesleyan Hall of Fame. But then the ODAC Hall of Fame was like, this is really outstanding type of thing. So I'm going to try and find that post for you and send it to you. But I think we'll be able to tell some really good stories this year going through all this. And this is another great example here that we had with Coach Bush and Coach Blackburn to talk about the two Hall of Famers that they were really associated with.
Yeah. And again, I think we've said this before. I'm going to say it again. I mean, we're dealing with Randolph Macon here, Phil Stanton and the contribution that Phil made to the Halls, and Richie Wagner at Hollins, and the history that Richie has in the league. And then all the sports information directors and athletic communication staff, they really played a pivotal role in building the foundation for what the Hall was going to look like, and then executing it. They've made our job so easy, and our membership did as well, by embracing the opportunity to name these individuals. And they're going to get another shot at it again, because I think we've got so many that we want to make sure that we get into the Hall. We're 50 years behind that we have a chance to have some more actual school appointees and honorees before we get into the nomination process and the selection, which will start, I guess, in 27-28 academic year. So great stuff. Want to thank those guys.
So while they've helped make our jobs easy, as you said, what is not easy in the ODAC is winning championships and then going on to the NCAA tournament, winning games there. We're going to focus on that with the remaining fall sports teams that we have in the NCAA tournaments next week. And I'm not going to say we have the podcast jinx here, because I'm going to tell you, we're going to have teams that are going to be still alive next week that we want to talk to. But you had title winners, you know, Washington and Lee women's soccer. You had field hockey at Lynchburg and men's soccer at Lynchburg. Three teams in on the men's and women's soccer side. And on the men's side, when I was going through, and I don't know if you noticed this, but when I was writing the selections release, that's the first time in ODAC history we've had three teams in on the men's side. So really cool there. So we're looking.
You know, here's the other thing. We were a hair's breadth away from having four teams.
Four.
In.
Yep, we were.
Really, Virginia really Wesleyan was right on the cut line of the NPI rankings, which is unfortunate. Love to have had four teams in. Had the Marlin in the tournament, but you know, amazing, right? Yep. And then, you know, hey, who'd have thunk it? We go into the season, you've scheduled in a way with the NPI system, and you need to win games. And I think that's the summary of where we are. And all those teams had a really good year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So on the men's side, we're looking forward to seeing where Lynchburg, Washington, Lee, and Hampton Sydney, not where, but what they do here, as two of them are hosting, Lynchburg and Hampton Sydney hosting WNL on the road. And then on the women's side, we're looking forward to Washington and Lee hosting here this weekend, and still with Bridgewater and Virginia Wesleyan on the road. Bridgewater going to my stomping grounds up in Cleveland area, Case Western Reserve. So we'll see how these teams do. Lynchburg already got a win under its belt in field hockey, beating Rowan yesterday on Wednesday, 3-2. Three first half goals that really stood up. So looking forward to seeing what they can do now at CNU, which I guess is your reward with air quotes, because CNU is unbeaten at 17-0 and number one in the country. And that's who the Hornets have 11 o'clock a.m. on Saturday.
One other thing, big thing going on, and we're mentioning fall sports, is regional cross country at Salem. So the Green Hill Park hosted the ODAC championships over the last couple of years, not this past year, but the prior 2 years, going to host the South region. I don't know, maybe it's a numbered region now, the traditional South region cross country competition this weekend. Huge endeavor, huge event, a lot of competitors, a wonderful venue. I'm so happy to see that they're going to have great weather this weekend. Yes. I want to wish our teams the best as they go into it, because cross country in the NCAA level at the Division III level is an all comers regional. I mean, you don't have to qualify. You're able to actually come and run. It's awesome that it's close. It's in the state of Virginia, which oftentimes it's not, to provide our institutions, one, the opportunity to compete, which many of them take advantage of anyway, but to be able to do it in a more economical way for us is an added bonus. So I want to thank the city of Salem, Roanoke County, Roanoke College for the work that they're putting into it. The track and field staff at Roanoke doing a great job of working with the city and the county to provide what I think is an awesome venue. I mean, what a beautiful venue.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be outstanding there. And then the week following, so next weekend, will be the national championships. And I know we'll have qualifiers for that. And it stays on this side of the country, really in the region, as you head down to Spartanburg, South Carolina. And I think it's the Milliken Center course that they've got there, getting that ready to go. A couple meets have been competed there this year. So looking forward to that also being in tow. But we've got some ideas on the next show for you guys. We'll talk to some people that are still involved in some NCAA tournaments. But for Brad Bankston, I'm JJ Nekoloff. We'll talk to you next time on the ODAC Podcast.